Hi, you're listening to Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters, 7 at 7 Stylist of Influence interview with tonight's guest, New York-based Rosemary Tejeda, master stylist and colorist, and soon to be salon owner. Hi, everybody out there, and welcome to another Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters Stylist of Influence interview. And tonight, or today, or tomorrow, or whatever else you get to listen to this, I've got an amazing guest from the Big Apple in New York. Myself and Rosemary, and it's Rosemary Tejeda. And first I'm going to say, hi, Rosemary.
Hello, my dear. How are you?
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Rosemary and how we know each other. I was a president of the Irish Hairdressers Federation once upon a time, and we got the opportunity to have an international guest come in. And Vivian McKinder was a big fan of Vivian for a long time. And a friend of mine, Alan Austin Smith, said, I know Vivian, I could get her over for you. And Vivian, being the lady is, said, yes, she'd love to come over on the condition that she needed to bring somebody along because she wanted to put on some education. She wasn't just coming over here, picking up an award and heading back. And when she came up in Dublin Airport, when I met them, I met the beautiful Rosemary and I met the lovely Vivian, the beautiful Vivian. It was as mad as a brush. I hope she wouldn't mind me saying that. But we just clicked. And we had a fantastic 3 or 4 days together. They put on an amazing show. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to keep in touch with Rosemary because Vivian's such a global artist. But Rosemary is real. And I'm going to keep. And we've met in New York and we've had dinner and we've had lunch and we've kept in touch. And I just find her very humble in what she's achieved in her career. She's around 33 years in hairdressing, which means she started when she was about 5. Yeah. And she's a New Yorker, born and bred. She's worked in television. She's worked with some amazing platform artists and being a platform artist herself, an international educator, Will Goldwell. Mm-hmm. You've worked on television shows like Ricky Lake. She's humbly said, I never went seeking awards. I was always happy to be in the background. And I've known a lot of hairdressers that have been like that. And she's been a salon hairdressing stylist for most of your career and is now going to boldly take a leap into, not the unknown, because she doesn't know how to do it. It's going to become a salon owner, yeah. Which I think is amazing because I always feel, you know, there's never the right time to start doing something. You know what I mean? There's the time, you know, when is the right time. You'll know yourself. Yeah. And the other thing I want to say about Rosemary is that she does some amazing work, and I've seen a little bit of it when you were here. But if you're watching this on YouTube and you look behind me, that's Rosemary's work, and it covers avant-garde, it covers commercial, it covers fantasy, it covers structure, it covers all. You tick all the boxes. So you're a real all-round hairdresser, and you'd know you're a stylist that works in a salon because that's where you can see the work. It's not just platform work. There's some work where you can kind of go, that's the guest that comes in, that's going out Saturday night. That's the guest that's, you know, the student that wants me hair. I want it blue, I want to be freaky for a couple of years, and then I want to come back. And now I'm grown up. And that's experience. That's where that comes from. And you've got a lot of it. And I hope that you're going to share it. We're also going to touch, Rosemary's also a member of an amazing group called Empowered Salon Leaders, and we're going to talk about that because it's something I've sat in on listening to the ladies, and I've got a lot out of it. Unfortunately, sometimes it goes out when it's past my bedtime because of the time difference, but I try and catch up on it. So, Rosemary, I'm going to start with the first question, and we're going to drift in and out. We're not going to stick to the questions as per se, but they're here as a guideline for me. Why did you choose hairdressing as a career?
Well, first of all, I feel like I need to have your recording and send it out to the world to speak for me, because I do like being in the background of things. So, you know, a lot of times I don't really speak much about what I've been fortunate enough to have been a part of. So thank you for your kind words and sharing that to the community. So why did I choose hairdressing? Well, there was two reasons. It was a friend of mine. We were grade school friends, and we used to just hang around, and we loved playing hair on each other, you know, doing each other's hair. But really what made me so drawn to it is serving others through a capacity of identifying individuality, empowerment, a sense of groundedness and helping them come alive from the inside out. That's really why, you know, it was, I didn't really have all those words at the time, but I always enjoyed seeing other people show up as their best selves. So that's why I chose hairdressing.
So basically you're a people person.
I am a people person. Yeah.
You like being around people. Yeah. So when you started your career, did you start, did you go to cosmetology college in the US, which we finally in Ireland have a national apprenticeship, and now we can send our apprentices off to college for one day a week, which I think is fantastic. But when you came out of college, what type of salon did you aspire to work in, or did you go, you know, with your CV looking into everywhere, or did you nearly go, that's where I want to work, that's the type of salon I'm going into?
I would say it was number two. So here's it's actually a funny story. When I decided, you know, I come from a culturally, in the Hispanic culture, it's kind of like you don't cut your hair for as long as possible. You just grow it until you become like a Rapunzel. You know, that was just like something you don't do. But there happened to be this one salon that I saw in this shopping center or a mall that we would go to. And it was shaped like a cave. It, literally, the whole decor was like a cave, the inside of a cave. It had stucco everywhere. It had marbles on the floor. It was, and I just thought the ambiance was so interesting. And I remember I got my first haircut there. And I said, and this was when I was probably about 11, 12 years old, I'm going to work there one day. And here I was after I finished graduating from beauty school or cosmetology school. That was my first job. So I went there and I applied, and they didn't have the apprenticeship program that I had hoped for, but I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I just knew that I wanted to start there. And that gave me sort of like, I would say the foundation of the trajectory of what I wanted to move forward as I went along in my career.
And what part of New York was that then that you were in?
At the time, it was in it was considered Long Island. So we're over in the suburbs. Yeah, we were in the suburbs. So I predominantly stayed mostly in the suburbs. And I did have an opportunity a few times to work in the city for short periods of time. But majority of my clientele comes from different parts of New York.
So. And back then, did you go in and you were put, right, you're going to be in the color section, or you're going to perm, because perming would have been perm. Yeah. And you're going to be a cutter. Did you have to focus on one, or were you encouraged to do it all?
Well, that salon particularly, they had you encouraged to do all.
Yeah.
You know, I came in, and really, honestly, at the end of the day, looking back at that career, though it gave me an understanding of that world, you really were becoming more of a making sure the salon stayed well cleaned than you did education, because they didn't offer you any education. The only way you were going to have that opportunity to become a stylist in that salon was one of two ways. And I didn't learn that until about 2.5 years in, was either someone passed on or if they got pregnant and did not return, which was unfortunate because they didn't build you technically. You just worked and watched from a distance. So it had its benefits because it helped me understand what I wanted, but it also had its disadvantages because it didn't support the individual to grow. And that's why I knew I needed to move on after about 2.5 years. And the good thing was I didn't have to make that decision. There was going to be a whole change in the location of the mall, the shopping center. They were revamping it, and that place was going to close down for quite a few years until they did the whole mall. So it was almost like a graceful beginning.
A blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
So when you were trying, I know you said you played with dolls and you played with your friend's hair and the whole lot, but what, when you went into the job, did you find everything came to you naturally, or what was the hardest part of which area did you feel, oh God, I'll never get this?
Honestly, styling.
Finishing.
Finishing. I thought it was the most difficult thing. I feel, and I still think, even 30 somewhat years later, is finishing to face shape personality and lifestyle, I think, is probably the most challenging thing, because you really need to identify that person and how you can change the head shape and the skull shape and what is the fashion of that person, whether it be something that's minimal to something that could be very avant-garde. I think it's very easy, and I don't mean easy as in basic. Anybody can take a pair of scissors and cut a piece of hair. But until you really understand the trajectory of that human being that you're dealing with, whether male or female, I feel like that's the hardest part, is identifying that individual and how you finish styling, how to get that body, that movement, the undoneness, how to get the sexiness. What's the difference between a rock and roll versus somebody who's more eclectic? I think a lot of people are so concerned or consumed with removing hair instead of how to move hair.
That's a good one. I like that. So how did you overcome that? Where did you feel, you know, yeah, now I've got that, or this is how I'm going to get it?
Twofold. Before I was fortunate enough to meet Vivian, I had gone through a second salon that I went to. And at the time, I'm going to backtrack and then I'll move fast forward.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I had left the other salon that wasn't working out for me, I decided to go to a smaller location of just some neighborhood salon. And I thought that, okay, perhaps I can start as a junior stylist. And the owner, unfortunately, mismanaged the salon, and he spoke a lot of words of promises, but no delivery. So I was still inquisitive about the career because I felt like I have yet to experience what I was hoping to experience, which I did not know what that was. And I stayed engaged with some of the stylists from the first location. But really, when I went and applied for a salon that was opening up a new location, a second location, which was a much more, I'm going to say in quotes, a much more well-known salon in Long Island, I walked in there, Greg, and I have to tell you, I was about to take 3,000 steps backwards because it had such, you know, when you walk into a place and you just feel like you are the awkward one or the most uncomfortable one, it had this great vibe of energy, but it had this attitude of I'm above everybody else.
Yeah.
And that was the primary location. So I was really uncertain whether I was going to apply there. So I actually applied, believe it or not, as a front desk personnel.
And how many years were you hairdressing then?
So at that point, I was, let's see, probably about 6 years.
6 years. So you were a stylist.
Yeah. So yeah. I was a junior stylist.
I did come across a few people, you know what I mean, that had done that. I've actually had one girl who done the opposite, who was a really great receptionist, but I knew there was a hairdresser, but she just didn't think financially, or she was too old. And then I remember at the time we'd done an arrangement with the general manager. I said, look, she's going to cover the desk, but it's worth investing because I think she'll make a great hairdresser. And she's still a great hairdresser in Peter Mark to this day, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And she made the move the other way. And then I've seen it gone vice versa, you know? And that's the beauty of our job, isn't it? Like a lot of people love the salon. You just need to find the job within the salon that suits you best. Yeah.
So when I applied, when they had the application, they asked, one of the questions that they asked was, do you have a license? So of course I, checked off the box. And then I never forget, I can remember this moment as clear as day, this huge, tremendously big, large biker man started walking my way, hair slicked back in a ponytail, a leather vest on. I mean, he literally looked like he came off of a Harley. I started walking towards me and they decided to have me interview him. And I was so terrified. And he said to me, so you're a hairdresser? And then I said, yes. And he goes, well, why are you applying at the front desk? And I said, well, because I have to see if this is really for me or not. I just felt like the opportunity might, maybe I'm holding on to something that is not for me. And he says, well, you're going to start as an apprentice and you're going to work through our program. And I was like, oh God, here we go again. And all I kept thinking about is that glorified cleaning lady that
I was six years prior.
But I was so intimidated by him and fascinated at the same time. But I have to tell you, the last words he said to me before we moved into the new location, because he remained at the main location and I moved to the new location, which was about a year and a half later. He said to me one thing, and I swear, hopefully I don't get emotional, because he is my driving force that has allowed me to stay consistent and learn about the art of hair. He said, you are like the daughter I never had.
Wow.
And yeah, you know, and he was, I was always so intimidated by him, but fascinated by him. And I respected him so much as a manager, as a leader, as a hairdresser, because I watched him and I learned a lot from him.
And did he drive a Harley?
He did drive a Harley.
There's hairdressers over here now, Rosie, and if they're listening to it, they're gonna know what I'm talking about, that drive Harleys. And I'm kind of going, you don't fit the criteria. You know, you're supposed to have a big mustache here with this and longer hair. You can't just go around on a Harley looking like a pop star. You know what I mean? There's a rock image that goes with that. My mate Mark, who does the hairdos with me, Mark fits that bill, but he doesn't even drive a Harley now. He did have them for a while and I kept breaking down on them because I don't think they're the most reliable bike.
Yeah, he would come in and big mustache. Everything that you said, he did that. And he would walk in and, you know, yes, yes, yes.
And he was good at his craft.
He was very good. He was a very, very, very big follower of Tony and Guy. So he would sit there and watch their videos for hours and minutes and days. And he was always doing techniques. Wasn't much of a talker at all. He was much more of, you know, executed the shapes and stuff like that. Mm. You know, and he was very funny when he would, he has since passed, one of the other guys is still around, but when he would want someone, an assistant to style hair, he would only do this. That was the conversation. And let me tell you, you hope you better got that symbol because that was about it.
I worked with a few people like that. You used to just lift their head and you knew what you were looking for. So if you were to go back to a young Rosemary now, what would you say to her?
Two things. One thing I wish that our industry, especially here in this country, would do. I think it is so imperative because the art across the pond is absolutely exceptional. I think we should do a transfer type of thing where you have to work abroad for at least a period of time, because I think you need to understand conceptually the art of hair through the eyes of another part of the world and work through the systematic. I wish I would have done that. That's one thing. The second thing I would have said to myself is do it afraid.
Do it afraid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because so, that's always, the way I done things.
Yeah.
I always had imposter syndrome. Can I really do this?
Yeah.
And it was only when it was finished and it was done, I used to go, that's all right.
Yeah, right. Like, I need a minute. I'll be right back.
That is good advice. You know what I mean? It's funny actually say that because I took a spell into distribution and we used to have to travel to Italy a fair bit. And that is a different culture because we used to always go across the pond, you know, over to the UK, back and forward. And then when I went to Italy, I remember sitting in a car, so myself and Alison was with me. And we're looking at the, and they're going, oh, this is a beautiful, look at this. And I'm going, it's yellow. And they're going, no, it is golden. It's beautiful. It's golden. It's yellow. If we done that at home, the client would be back in and going, my hair's yellow. And Alison realized, she says, no, the hair is also dark there. Once they see lightness, they think that's great. They think it's golden. But if you run that on an Irish woman, Jesus, my hair's yellow. What are you doing? You know what I mean? They want to see blonde. They want to see it white. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it kind of made me look that, yeah, there's a different, you know, they look at it different. Even down to finishing, they were slightly, you know, I was looking kind of going, it's a bit of a mess. And then you'd look at me, you'd start to realize, actually, it's nice. And then you looked at how it was a different type of hairdressing. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it was they were aspiring to be London hairdressers. And yet you were looking and going, you know, your own work is good. But when they done avant-garde stuff, it was absolutely amazing. You know what I mean? Like this, their finishing on that type of work was exceptional. You know what I mean? That I felt they could teach a thing or two over to this side, you know? So yeah. Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that. That we need to become more worldly. But I think the power of, you know, Zoom and all the rest of it, that is good, but it's still nothing replaces physically meeting people and physically going there and understanding, you know, how they work, how they operate, how they take appointments. And the other thing you'll often find as well is that same shit happens in salons no matter where you go in the world. Right. There is that awkward woman. There is the woman who's habitually 10 minutes late. There is that person that think it's quite acceptable to cancel her appointment 10 minutes before she comes in. But we spoke about that off camera, about the taking deposits now and taking a nice chunk of money, which now I do actually feel, well, that's fine. You cancel, that's fine. Well, at least that stylist got €30. You know what I mean? They got something for the time, whereas for a long time we got nothing. And we felt, oh, that's the way it is. And I think we're changing, the industry's changing, hopefully. So I want to move on to the next question. What do you feel makes an amazing stylist? Now, I don't mean an international platform artist. I mean a stylist that's really an asset to the salon that they work in.
Humility. I think you need to know when you don't know. And you need to ask for help if you don't know. And also, I think you need to be humble enough to be grateful for the things that you learned and being a constant student of growth, whether it be personally, professionally, technically, whatever that is. But I think what makes an asset to the salon is humility, being humble.
So, and realize that none of us know it all, as we just said earlier. We've often been there doing the haircut. Do I really know this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how to, I suppose it's knowing that what you do know, you should be passing it on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That everybody has something to give to somebody else. And I think you're right there. And you're the first time to say that, but I think that does sum it up, humility. You know, I think that's a great answer. So moving on. And I've two ways of looking at this, and I always look at it because I always give Jenny the credit for this, because when I asked her, who are your mentors? She said, well, a mentor has to be somebody I know, but if you want to ask me who inspires me, I can tell you both. So now I always ask that question is, who are your mentors or mentors that you've had in your career, and who have been your inspirations?
Okay, so I think, and I didn't understand this at first, I used to always think it was somebody who had to be in my present space, but I do think you need to have a mentor or somebody who inspires you in every aspect of your life. I don't think it needs to be just hair related or business related. I think it needs to have spiritual. I think you need to have somebody that is maybe entrepreneurial. I think it needs to be someone that's your career personally. So for me, on a personal professional level, is John Maxwell. Mm. You know, he's a leadership guru. For those of you who don't know, he's written over 100 books on leadership and personal development. And I would have to say he's been the trajectory of my career path of where I've become. Because when I started my career, looking back, I have learned that I had to balance the scale between who I was as a technical artist and who I was as the individual. I kept consuming myself with being surrounded by the people who were technically inspiring me. Tony and Guy, Vivian McKinder, the list goes on. I mean, I can go on, Sassoon, all those people, which helped me so much in so many layers of understanding in the depth of career. But I didn't know who I was here. So there was a gap. Oops, that's my watch talking to me, sorry. Yes, there's no exercising going on. But but I needed to have an understanding of who we were, because if I could get that balanced out, it would allow me the opportunity to grow to the next layer and give more of what I'm doing. So from a career standpoint, Tony and Guy, Vivian McKinder, because Vivian McKinder really helped me develop my artistry. And being able to understand of unlearning and relearning through a different eyes, because I came later into my career knowing her and working alongside her. Professionally and personally was John Maxwell. Entrepreneurially, I would have to say, is the CEO of the John Maxwell Company, which is Mark Cole, because he helps me understand how it is to develop yourself as a leader and as a person of influence. And it doesn't have to be financially. You can become rich without the dollars. Spiritually, there's quite a few spiritually. I think that I love listening to Joyce Myers. I love listening to John Maxwell. I love listening because he is a man of faith. And I get inspired. I really do get inspired mostly by people who have touched my lives. So like listening and sometimes seeing the things that you shared, you know, those are inspirations to me. Those move me forward. Those give me opportunity to like fly, to step outside of my comfort zone. So hopefully that answered your question, but you know.
So I'm going to ask you, because I would the Rosemary the pre John Maxwell have taught us that, am I good enough to be part of Empowered Salon Leaders?
No.
So when you went into Empowered, what's the vision? And tell us a little bit more about Empowered Salon Leadership.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Empowered Salon Leaders started from when the world came to a screeching halt. And there are four women who are part of the John Maxwell team. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the John Maxwell team, it started originally, I'm a founding member. So I started when there was only 1,000 members in 2011. And Christine, Tina, and Nuala, who's also a fellow.
Nuala's a good elf,
you wouldn't
think it to hear her accent. And she's on my, tell her she's on my radar. She is going to be interviewed.
I will definitely tell her. I will most certainly tell her. Christine, actually, she is a Sassooni, and so is Nuala. And they are very, very good friends. And Christine came up with a concept of using some John Maxwell content, because when the world shut down, John Maxwell travels quite a lot. And he actually developed a course on really understanding the dynamics of where we are, living through crisis. That was the name of it. And Christine came up with the idea of, how do we pour into a community that we all love and want to see the community come together and continue to rise above it through this time that the world has been halted, through leadership, through personal growth and personal development. And we met weekly, we would have guests on, and then we would take it and we would start doing content that we were fortunate enough to learn and bring into the community about leadership development and really developing teamwork, understanding how to coach your people properly, how to understand to coach yourself properly, what it really meant as opposed to taking the word and just throwing it around. But the focus is really predominantly on working with salon owners, salon leaders, heads of departments, and then of course, people who may have the interest of moving forward. So we meet weekly and we do mastermind studies, which we actually call them master classes. We also have a coaching segment that we do once a week, and we go through basically the 12, we call them the 12, it's called Today's Matters. And it's the thing about how living in today as opposed to focusing on yesterday, but you have to live in today to bring yourself forward into tomorrow.
Yes.
So we have that as well. And that's the Empowered Salon Leaders VIP Club. So that's very intentional people. We call it VIP. And then we have our masterclass. So we meet weekly and we have just different types of people brainstorming, going through things, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and developing our industry to take it to the next level of understanding the dynamics of what we bring aside from just the technicality part.
And just anybody that's listening out there, you just go live on Facebook, isn't it? Weekly.
Yes.
It's Mondays.
Yeah. Monday. Every Monday at 6 p.m. Yep.
And they're always recorded there. And I would say to anybody out there or salon owner that wants to have it, because sometimes we can be a little bit insular. And as you just said, even with your career, you're looking at one area of it. And you might, it's sometimes a fresh approach, or the fact that it's for women. Do you know what I mean? It's like me with my other podcast, The Hair Dudes. It's five dudes, but that's not about hair. It's just the common denominator is we know each other through hair, but it's just us five chatting about life and music and all the things that we're interested in. Whereas yours is the industry, the business, and people development, because I think that's a big part of it. And I think all the things I love you saying is that it's not always about money, because I think sometimes we come in too much and talk about, like, I listened to a podcast on how to cut it in the hairdressing industry with the owner of the Chapel Hair Group in London, And it actually blew me away, you know what I mean? And I've been rapping on about it to the people in the team, to the salon owners, and I'm sure the girls probably got more hits on our, you know, the interview and the, from me talking about it. And there's no financial gain in it to me. I just felt, God, that's a very fresh way of looking at things. And they you pay for their time.
Yeah.
So it's not about a haircut's this price, a head of mesh, a tint regrow. It's you're paying for the person's time. Yeah. And that really intrigues me so much so that I'm actually hoping to get there because Sean, one of our hair dudes, works there. And I'm hoping to get a day to spend the day in the salon because I'd love to see how it works. And that's the way, and you're very, I think when I look at you four ladies, you're very open to everything. You know what I mean? To new, it's not like this is the way we've done it, should do what we're doing. It's very open. And they're all very different personalities. Well, I think you're setting Newland in New York, aren't you?
Yes,
Christine,
yes.
And Christine aren't, sure they aren't.
Christine's over in New Jersey, and Tina drops from Michigan to Florida because she's originally from Michigan, but she also has a place. And Tina Black has, I think she's opening up her 8th Paul Mitchell school.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, she's Paul Mitchell lady. Yeah.
Yes, she's Paul Mitchell. And then Christine has worked, like I said, she was with Sassoon for many years, and then she worked with Davines, and she's a salon owner right now. And Nula had worked for Nico Rojo for many years, and then has decided after COVID that she really wanted to become her own entrepreneur. So, you know, it's a nice mix of everything, and me still actively in the salon world. It gives perspective from behind the chair because, you know, they're all on the front end. And, you know, sometimes I stand for the stylist quite a lot. Because I think it's important because people like myself, you know, we're still in the trenches, and sometimes people don't know what they don't know until they don't know it, you know? So it's one of those things, you know, where you have to kind of go through it and you say, oh, you know, maybe perhaps this is something that I can learn about if you decide that maybe it's a time for you to move on and grow your own business or maybe take on a salon or bring another layer to where you're working, you know, to support the owner of the salon.
And your own salon now, we're going to talk that you're opening. When are you due to open?
Well, right now we have the inspectors. Everything seems to be a go. And I'm trying to shoot for July 1st. And when I was 17 years old, I had this dream of having a very large scaled business where you would come in as one person and you would literally come out as another. It would have every single component. And then over the years, it has fallen to the wayside because I got to be honest with you, I didn't believe I could.
Hmm.
There was that gap that I was talking about. You know, I invested a lot into education, but I didn't invest into me.
Yeah.
So, and in the last year, I have to say, I know for those of you who are, whether you're spiritual or not, please forgive me in advance for saying this, but literally I was driving to work one day and a voice came into my head in November, and it said, it's time to accomplish. So it's not a word that is not going away. And I kept, as we call it, poo-pooing it on the side and just kind of kicking it to the curb. And I feel this is what I have to do. So,
are you going large? Or are you
No.
Well, that's the one thing I would say to you. I think the future of salons will be a little bit more compact. I think if you're going large, it's going to be a suite.
Yes.
Suite rent, you know, build rental or suites. And I think there will be a place because it's one of the, like, yous have a massive growth. Like, build rental and rent a chair is what's the percentage of that versus employed?
I think it's almost at 50%, to be honest with you.
Is it like 50% is rent a chair?
I think that there's probably, I think there's a lot more than I realize out there. I work.
Yeah, because we've been told here that in the States now, it's around 80% of hairdressers rent a chair.
It could possibly
20% be. 20% are employed. And then if you're in the UK, they're saying it's moving 60, 70%. And now there is a group of salon owners in the UK that have started to go, we want to talk to the government because we're the ones that collect taxes for use of all these people. And people here have said, the government of Ireland are very cute. They don't want rent a chair to come in. And I'm going, well, the government won't have any choice if it comes in. But what we have to do is make sure Like I've somebody said, would you do rent a chair? I said, I don't know whether my salon would be rent a chair. So I don't know. But if I ever was to do it, it would be the best version I've ever found possible. But yeah, you have to remember there has to be growth. There has to be future hairdressers. So if everybody's just coming in for their own book,
yeah,
well, who's going to be doing the hair in 10 years time? And that's why I feel that hair salon, I just feel hairdressing in the future will be not a cheap service. It'll be very professionally run. The people who work within it will be very professional in how to conduct themselves. As you would say, the days of education, you know, growing yourself, but not just growing your skills, it's growing as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I, at nearly 60 years of age now, as I said to you earlier, I'm a funtrepreneur. Why? Because I like working with people I have fun with. I like doing, and I'm lucky that the industry I'm in is fun. Because somebody says, oh, do you see that podcast thing? Do you make any money out of them? Well, I don't know. Someday I might, someday I won't. Someday somebody might come in and want to sponsor it. But do I do it for that? No. Because having somebody like Rosemary here, or, you know, Aisling that I've interviewed this week, that's gone out on Monday, is 8 years hairdressing.
Wow.
And she's wrote a book for apprentices during lockdown.
Whoa, wow, that's fantastic.
To guide them into how to put your CV together for an interview, how to, you know what I mean, how to go for your interview. Introduce us to your friend.
Very nosy cat. Sorry, I apologize.
You have a cat on if you're not watching on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, you see the cat. If you're not, Jacob, it's a beautiful black cat there in the background.
Let me get him off. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so like, so we know where the future is immediately.
Yeah.
But where do you, over the next 12 months and beyond, do you see Rosemary going? What would you like to...
I actually would like to do more consulting. Hmm. That's really where I would like to put my focus. I'm really helping stylists work, even though I'm going on my own, and this was a choice that I am choosing to make. I do find the power of working with a team so important. And I'm going to be working as an outside independent within a culture of a team. So I plan on bringing this idea of concept of a collective community. I don't think people working alone is the best thing to do for yourself, because you have nothing to work against.
Mm.
So I'll work towards, like, I always find working as a team very important. So I'd like to help stylists, whether you're an independent or if you're in a place of growth for your company, or you're finding that you're finding brackets where things could, you want to up level it. I really like to develop my my personal business of consulting and coaching and development.
So when you say you want to grow and develop, when you open the salon, mm-hmm, how many days do you plan on being behind the chair?
Technically, I was only going to go 4 days, but it may be five. But I'm going to be very exclusive on my hours, and I'll probably work my hours in the salon of also the other business that I'd like to build at the same time.
Yeah. See, well, my advice, if you want to.
Yeah, sure, sure. No, I love it.
Would be to go in no more than 3 days.
Okay.
Behind the chair, because the temptation is to be, and the guests that are coming are going to gravitate towards the owner. You know what I mean? And now it took me a long time to realize that I want to grow the team. I want to do this. I want to work outside. I want to be a distributor. And it was my receptionist who we spoke with, Gwen earlier, very linear, said to me, you can't have every way, Greg. You're coming in here and you're moaning because your lady now is with such and such over there and you're over there, but you don't want to do as many. So you have to have one or the other. So now I'm quite happy when I come into the salon and I see guests who are guests of mine now with other team members. And I'll join in. Like on Monday, I was in, and there was a guest of mine that was coming to me on and off for years, and our youngest stylist was doing it, who is very competent haircutter, but she was cutting it, and I went over and I interviewed. You know, I was chatting about, and then I went, "You blew me out." And she goes, "Really? I'm not here as much." I said, "No, but you're in safe hands there because I trained her myself, and Beth's very good." But I said, "But I tell you what, Beth, go tighter than that. Go good and tight." Because I said this lady loves her hair really tight. Her kids aren't mad on it, but they don't wear her hair. She likes her hair this, and she's and I knew that she was, as a young stylist, you know, when you're afraid, first time doing it, better not cut it. And I'm going, no, knock yourself out here. And then I went off to do air recycling, which I do. And I was coming back into car park, and there was the lady coming out of the fruit and veg with a lovely shot and looked buzzing and smiling. And one part of me said, well, there's another one you've lost now, Greg. And another part of me said, brilliant. You know what I mean? There's somebody doing it. So sometimes I feel to lead from the, you know, we're nearly leading from the front. Look at me. And then that's the mistake we make. And then it's very hard to get out of that. You know what I mean? So I my thing would be go in there and do no more than 3 days.
No, I love that it. I appreciate it.
The time if you're tight and you're running a bit low, you know what I mean? But you kind of need to, and then they're not dependent on you there all the time because the guests will grab it. Who owns the salon? Oh yeah, I'll go to her. She must be the best. She owns the salon. And we don't be. Don't always be.
Don't always be available.
No, yeah, I've learned a lot more from stylists. Like our younger people, the first year, the graduate stylist just helped the first year on our next level of the star team competition. So she's done the interview, which a CV, which got her to the next level. She's done the interview on Zoom, which got her to the next level. And now she's to produce a model, but they're allowed to get the haircut done. They're allowed, you know, get the help with the colour because it's only for apprentice hairdressers. And this, as I said to her, if you do this in your first year, you might be lucky enough to make star team. I don't know, but you don't know yourself. But you will learn from the experience and you have another 2 years to enter. Yeah. And if you get there, but every time you enter, you're going to learn. It's like every move you've made, you've chipped away till eventually you've now gone, you know, I'm ready. I'm going to do it myself. And I really hope to be in your salon someday in New York, because I know it'll be an amazing experience. And maybe I'll get the cultural change that I want. And who knows, I might say, any chance you can give an old 6-year-old a day or two, because I might move to New York for a month.
Oh my goodness, I feel like, you know what, we'd be so busy talking and probably wouldn't get anything done other than just having a great conversation and a couple of drinks, right?
And tell me, a lot of young hairdressers here, Aisling has worked on London Fashion Week, which is amazing. You know, you've done New York Fashion Week in your time. That must be something else.
That was it was when the first time I actually worked with Zach Posen, before Zach Posen became the Zach Posen that we know nowadays. And Eugene Solomon was the head hairdresser. And I was so nervous because I didn't really know Zach Posen. You know, you just saw him as this short young man, you know, curly hair and just futzing around with all the models and whatnot. But then you would see Eugene just being very calm, cool, and collective. And here's a funny story. So here it is. There is one boy, I'm going to say boy because the way he behaved, it was very childlike, was talking to this one model, and she was very young, and he kept asking her if she knows how to turn left, like Zoolander, that movie Zoolander. And he's like, do you know how to turn left? And I'm looking at him like, are you really asking this question? And he's a photographer, or it works in the publication, whatever. And then I'm looking at him like, really, this is what you're going to ask her? And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's trying to explain. And while he's having this conversation and I'm trying to divert and get this model done, P. Diddy walks in with his entourage. So now the room is getting tighter and smaller. And I don't know what happened. I apologize for those of you who don't know me, but my New York went to what we call a level 10. And I was like, excuse me, Mr. Diddy, you're in my way.
I'd love that. I'd love to put him back in his, you know what I mean? Well, actually, no, P. Diddy's okay. It's the other Muppet that does me head in. That's married to Kim Kardashian.
Kanye.
Kanye, yeah. Now, you know, I kind of thought Donald Trump was bad as president of America. I don't know whether I'm right in saying that or not, but to me, he didn't do anything for the globe as regards people loving Americans or America. But I don't think Kanye will do any more for it either, you know what I mean? So let's hope that American politics is going to find its place back in a little bit of normality.
You're right.
And I'd love to see a young dynamic politician breakthrough in America, because old men running countries is not a good thing. You know, if we look at Ukraine at the moment, don't know a lot about the man, Zelensky, but he's going to come out of this, hopefully in one piece, but he's going to come out of this as a proper global leader, because I think everybody's looking, going, wow, well, that man's really conducting himself so well. Now, it probably helps he was an actor, because he can act. Right. And I've always maintained that hairdressers would make great actors or actresses, because we go on stage every day. And most of us put on a great performance. And I always remember yourself and Vivian being on stage here, and the audience really loved it and really delivered it. But in fairness, Vivian delivers things in a very friendly, fun way. You know what I mean? And you just played with it and went along with it. You know what I mean? You didn't mind being in, you know, being the wingman to Vivian, you know what I mean? Or the wingwoman to Vivian, maybe politically correct here, person, wing person. But you knew that you were enjoying it and you loved it. And I would say you were in awe of Vivian, but you knew this was part of the process I'm going through and I'm learning. And you were a very accomplished stylist at that stage. And that's what I always feel. When people feel, I know it all, I'm going, well, you don't, because you never know it all. Because all of us never thought we would be closing our businesses for months on end. And we never thought our governments would come in and go, hey, hold on, I'll keep the business afloat for you till you get back open. So none of us know what lies ahead. All we can do is be our best version of ourselves. And that's the one thing I've always felt with you, Rosemary, is that you put out the best version of yourself all the time. Anytime I see it, when I met you in New York, when I've seen you when I'm for the first time here, when I've seen you on the Empowered Salon Leaders. And the other ladies are lovely, but I think these are a lovely combination. And I think it works really well. And I would encourage any salon owner or manager to go and have a listen to the ladies, because we are a female dominated industry that probably for a long time had too many males dictating, you know, the direction. And, you know, it's like me in politics. I always say, I wish there was more female politicians. Why? Because I'm a hairdresser. They would understand my industry more. They would understand us more. They would understand us when we go to them about stuff instead of baldy men. Or orange men. So listen, Rosemary, it's been absolutely fantastic. I've really, really enjoyed it. Is there anything else you want to give us? Any gems or any little bit of insights that we might not know about you or you'd like us to know about you?
Well, I'll tell you, for anyone who's interested in regards, thank you for that. We're going to be hosting a live event. We haven't established a location. But the live event will take place, perhaps maybe even in Florida. I'm not going to say for sure, but it's in September. It's a 2-day event, and it's going to be focused on living the laws of leadership. It's a 2-day workshop where it's going to be hands-on. And what I really love the dynamic of this event that we're doing is not only are you going to be surrounded by other leaders in your industry, but you get to learn from each other so you can collaborate. And it's about creating teams and an environment that will attract the type of clients that you want, keep the staff that you need, and help develop yourself. So that's information. So even if you just join our Facebook page, you will see stuff posted about that. We're working on all the, obviously, the stuff that it's entails. And it is a 2-day workshop, a Sunday, Monday.
And what I'd say to anybody out there in Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters in our community is share it I will share it on the Facebook group, you know what I mean? And I'll put it out there, because you might happen to be in Florida on holidays, if it's in Florida, we'll find out. And you could be there. And this amazing event could be part of a 2-day. Yeah. And then that would be a legitimate business expense that you could give to your accountant. I've always looked to, how can I go somewhere to learn and also maybe have a bit of a vacation while I'm there that my account won't beat me up over?
Right.
So listen, Rosemary, I think that's fantastic. And I hope anybody out there that's interested in that, because it's something I might even consider looking at myself once I get the dates in and once we get looking at the venue and where it is, because I'd love to see the girls, not just in the metaverse, but in real life, because I think the networking and what I'd learned, just maybe getting a little bit of time on our own just to chat to each other. I feel the world of collaboration is the future. And and as you said, going globally, we need to collaborate for our industry, because there's so much pulling from everybody's disposable income now. Like, I walk by nail bars, and I've seen it in New York, and I'm going, hey, that's some revenue that used to come into my business. and now women's nails are, so is the hair now getting secondary? And, you know, so we need to make sure that we're putting our best self forward. So listen, Rosemary, you've been an amazing guest and a great friend, and I hope that we get to meet again in real life very soon. And I'd like to thank you again. And if you'd like to say one last word and say goodbye to Salon Soul brothers and sisters.
Okay, so I'm going to take some words that have been said by my mentor, John Maxwell. Be a river, not a reservoir.
Beautiful. I can't say any better than that. So until we meet again, may the Hair Force be with you. Take care. Mind yourselves.
Bye. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for listening to our Salon Soul Brothers and Sisters 7 at 7 Stylists of Influence interview. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share with the rest of the hairdressing community out there. Thank you.